Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed. And Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's real Aussie energy. Switch today.
7 minutes past six. Hello and welcome to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and for Kia. You can join us on the Harcourts open line at any time, 13 13 32. For all things real estate, you can speak to Harcourts and Club Mandalay, the must-play golf course in Melbourne's north. In fact, we might get you around our best caller tonight and a beverage afterwards, a round for two. We'll throw in a cart, a beer. If you have your say on anything you want that's happened in the last 24 hours in sport, it could be Will Pekowski, and if he's going to go straight into the test team, surely the time is now. He's averaging 457 to start the Shield season, by the way. He's just made a consecutive double century. I think the first guy to do that since 97, 98. It's an unbelievable feat. And, of course, the trade period, well, we like to say it's warming up. It's starting to heat up now. They've got until Thursday to do their deals. And the deal between GWS and Geelong is no closer to getting done. In fact, GWS have, in the last few hours, rejected Geelong's offer of two first-round picks for Jeremy Cameron, but they want a second-round pick back. So what is he worth? I've got some fairly strong thoughts on that and what he's worth and what the Giants should be willing to take. But 13, 13, 32, the best caller tonight on this can go in the running. We'll give it away tonight for that great package at Club Mandalay. We welcome Shane McGinnis. Shano.
Evening to you, Sam. Good to be with you. Disappointing effort from Will Pekowski today. He went out on 202. Unlike in his first Shield match, he was not out on 255. He was dismissed today, Will Pekowski. Needs to improve.
Does he go straight into the test team?
He has to.
To open?
You have to take the evidence that we see before us, and this is what the selectors have always said in more recent times, that the evidence and the form players get the spot in the test team, especially the fact that the tests start later this year. I think gives him every opportunity to be in that test side for the day-night test against Adelaide.
13-13-32, if you've got some thoughts on that. I wonder how Geelong fans are feeling at the moment. Jeremy Cameron has basically said, I want to come to your club. The Cats have offered two first-round picks. Now, we know they've got three at the moment because of the mega deal that they did for Tim Kelly and the West Coast Eagles last year. The Giants have said no. They don't want the two first-round picks. Geelong also want a second-round pick back, but I wonder even if it was two first-round picks right now. Let's say it's two late first-round picks. Is that enough for GWS? I personally don't, and I'll tell you why. In the last 5 years, since 2015, GWS has taken 11 players inside the top 16 players in the draft. Just think about that for a moment. 11 since 2015. Now, what's happened to the Giants since then? Off the top of my head, they made the prelim in 2016. Mm-hmm. They should have won the flag in 2016. They got beaten by the Dogs in that epic. They've made a grand final, of course, in 2019, albeit they were beaten off the parks. You can mount an argument that apart from winning premierships, they have been one of the most successful teams in the home and away season since 2015. And yet, they've taken 11 players inside the top 16 in the national draft. Now, let me compare that to the most successful team since 2015, and that is, without dispute, Richmond. Richmond have taken Daniel Rioli at pick 15 in 2016, and then the following year they took Jack Higgins at pick 17. That's it. So now I know a lot of you are screaming the radio, well, what's your point? My point is that the Giants don't need picks, because even if they take two first-round picks from Geelong, and even if they nail them both, think Haitley and Caldwell. They nailed both those picks. Now they're both leaving because they won't get a game for the first couple of years. They don't get offered big money to come home potentially and play for someone else where they're going to get a game. Now the Cats have said, we don't want to give you players. Well, if I'm GWS, I am holding firm and let's see who blinks first.
So the argument is the Giants are still in the premiership window. Despite missing out on the finals this year, they still have the crop to make a run at it in 2021 and 2022.
I actually think that that's somewhat irrelevant in this argument. Well, no, I know it's completely relevant because all we're in this game for is winning premierships. But this is about...
But if they're a rebuilding club, they can take the first round picks. If they're not rebuilding, then the player...
But Shane, rebuilding doesn't exist anymore.
Of course it does.
No, it doesn't. Clubs don't rebuild. Look at Geelong. Look at Sydney. They don't rebuild.
They don't have to. What
you
about...
You keep chipping...
So what's North Melbourne doing?
North Melbourne, I will grant you, is an anomaly, and it's an
what
anomaly.
What have Melbourne
for
and Carlton been doing the last couple of years?
Yeah, but they've failed. Those two clubs have failed at what they did, and they will be the first to admit that they never should have bottomed out.
You don't want to bottom out, but clubs do, and clubs will continue to.
Giants aren't going to start again. Like, we know that.
So
they're not starting again. The Giants will continue to try to make the finals every year. They're not going to say, no one with a team of Stephen Cornelio, Josh Kelly, Lockie Whitfield is going to start rebuilding because they've lost their key forward.
So that's my argument. The Giants believe that they are still, all right, premiership window maybe too extreme. Certainly finals window that they are still very much in finals contention. Then who is the player from Geelong? And I'd love to hear from Geelong fans on this, 13-13-32. Who is the player from Geelong that is expendable? Mm-hmm. That's the word I'm trying to get. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yep.
Either one. Expendable from Geelong to go to Greater Western Sydney. Because it's got to be someone of ilk, it's got to be someone of talent, and it's got to be someone that's going to satisfy the Giants in giving up Jeremy Cameron.
I understand that Brandon Parfitt doesn't want to go. And that's fine, by the way. As in, it's his right not to want to go. I still think, though, that if it works for all teams, he might have to go. Josh Kennedy didn't want to go to West Coast when Chris Judd was coming to Carlton. In fact, he was devastated that he was being kicked out of Carlton. Worked out okay for him.
Worked out very okay.
Now, the AFL Players Association has been very successful in making free agency as prolific as we've ever seen it. Players put up their hand. Look, Josh Dunkley, premiership player at 23, got 2 years left on my deal, I want to go. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we better move him. And yet, as soon as a club wants to move a player, no, I'm not saying that Geelong want to move Parfitt, but my point is that if Parfitt's going to be the difference between Jeremy Cameron getting to Geelong or not, well, I think we have to think long and hard about clubs should have it both ways.
But that's where the onus is on the club, not to sign a player that you believe you may need to trade in a year or two. And if Brandon Parfitt is still contracted, similarly, as we had the argument last week, to someone like Adam Treloar, albeit on far less money and far fewer years, then he's got the ace up his sleeve, Brandon Parfitt, and he's well entitled to use that ace.
Now, it was a year ago that Gold Coast decided to call Carlton's bluff. It was really the other way around. But Craig Cameron, who former list manager at GWS, now list manager at Gold Coast, as experienced as they come, decided that, no, we're going to make a stance. We've got enough picks. If Carlton aren't going to give us a first-round pick for Jack Martin, I think the offer was a future second from memory, well, then he can go to the draft. And that's what they did. Now, they ended up losing him for nothing, and they've been heavily criticised for that. But they made a stand as a franchise club that has been given oodles of concessions that they didn't need another pick. I am not saying that this is the same scenario. And, of course, Jeremy Cameron is a much more proven player than Jack Martin is. Fully understand that. There's no way the Giants are going to let him walk for nothing. What I'm saying to you is, at some stage, this footy club has to take a stand and say, well, you know, Adam Treloar left for two first-round picks. Mm. Dylan Shield left for two first-round picks. This guy's kicked 430 goals for us. At the very least, he makes us a 2.5-goal better team. And you're giving us two first-round picks, of which we don't know what's going to happen because it's a lottery at the end of the day. And even if we hit both of them, they'll probably want to leave, or at least one of them will want to leave at the end of 2 years. How does this help our footy club? You just think of all the kids that are coming through at this team that, and some are in the first team every week and some others aren't. They're all going to want more money soon because of what's happening. Taranto, Hopper, Himmelberg, Perryman. We've seen what's happened with Caldwell and Haitley. Tom Green is going into his second year of footy. Lockie Ash, they both look like they're going to be stars of the competition. This situation that is unfolding at GWS is a serious one. And I don't think two first round picks, unless one of them happens to be a top 10 pick, is going to satisfy GWS. And I can understand that. Now, I'm not saying that Geelong is being unreasonable. We know that they're one of the most reasonable clubs going around. We spoke to Stephen Wells on the show last week, and he said, we think we've offered something fair and equitable. Clearly that's two first round picks, but they want a second back. I'm just saying, for the context of the club that they are dealing with, I just don't think it's right. Andrew's in Nidri on the Harcourt's open line, 13-13-32. Round of golf at Club Mandalay for two, a cart, a couple of beers afterwards for our best caller tonight. Andrew, welcome.
G'day, fellas. Look, I just want to question, I'll just question the issue with Cameron. I think GWS needs to get the best deal because, as you point out, the dramas, they're losing great players every year, and I don't think it's right. But I reckon what I was ringing about was the Essendon drama or comedy. Is it a drama or comedy at Essendon in relation to the way we do our drafts every year?
I'd say it's because I'd say it's a drama at the moment, Andrew. The fact that we're still not getting them done at Essendon, and I think a lot sits around Adam Saad at the moment, Josh Dunkley as well.
Yeah, I actually think, for what it's worth, I think it's Carlton that's holding up the side, you.
With regard to pick, we
just give pick eight. Move on. They're asking for a future second back. I can't believe that.
Would Essendon accept a future first as opposed to pick eight this year?
No, they would. I think Essendon would if it was just a future first, which will probably be worse than
I agree.
Pick eight, yep. Given that I think it's widely believed, and I've still got my doubt, that Carlton will get better next year, mm-hmm. given the players they're bringing in, given that Charlie Curnow, if he's fit, given that, you know, Cripps is not playing on with one arm. I think that they'll, at the very least, want to play finals. So that pick will probably be worse. But I just, it baffles me that Carlton have given this guy a 5-year deal
on
big money. They've spent 3 weeks convincing him. They've succeeded, by the way. So big tick for Carlton. And yet they're haggling over exchanging of future picks. Mm. It just baffles me. Just give pick eight, move on. I think Essendon have absolutely held up deals over the years. But I think if we're going to call it as we see it, I don't think they're holding up this one. Keith's in Portland. G'day, Keith.
G'day, boys. Look, I was thinking about the TAB. I've worked it out what's wrong there.
Oh, yes. Big debacle over the weekend, of course.
Yeah, it's the top dog, you know, which is David Attenborough. He still works with an abacus. That's what happened.
So the computer systems stuffed it up, Keith.
Yeah.
Well, Keith, it was certainly a massive issue across Australia. They delayed the Morfettville races until today. Obviously, the Melbourne Cup Carnival was coming to its crescendo.
Couldn't put a quaddie on yesterday if you wanted to have a casual punt.
It would have cost them millions.
Oh, yeah.
Millions.
Their heads will roll because of that.
Oh, absolutely.
This is Sports Day. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed, and we are powered by Ren Energy. You can make the switch today. Obviously, as Shane mentioned off the top, a very significant day, not just for Victorian cricket, but Australian cricket. Will Pekoski, a back-to-back double century, now 457 runs to start his Sheffield Shield campaign. He did get dismissed today, which is unlike him because he doesn't usually. Their GM of cricket, Sean Graff, the godfather, as Jared calls him, is going to join us on the other side of this.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed. And Red Energy. That's real Aussie energy. Switch today.
Deal.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Let's go straight to our Harcourt's open line before we get to the godfather of Victorian cricket, Sean Graff, to speak about Will Pekoski. Tony's in Roeville. G'day, Tone.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Look, I want to challenge you on this idea that Carlton's holding up that trade. I mean, the Carlton trade team have one job and one job only, to do the best job they can for that football club. And it's not upon them to make the trade week tick. Now, they know Essendon have got a whole bunch of deals they're trying to get sorted, and they're the ones that are going to blink first on this one. So I reckon hold firm. That would be my advice.
How do you think Adam Saad's feeling, though, Tony?
Oh, look, you know, I mean, these guys would be watching this from afar. I mean, the reality is they do have the PSD if they want to go down that path. They could do that again. Okay, so, I mean, in the end, it's a case of, okay, this is what Carlton thinks it's worth, and that's what they're offering. So I don't see how they're holding up a deal, because who magically decides that a player is worth a particular pick? I don't see that anyone can make that judgment.
Well, I think when a guy's finished top three in the best and fairest three of the last 4 years, and they've offered him a 5-year deal at big money, that probably suggests that he's worth a fair bit in Carlton's eyes, Tony.
Well, that's true, but in the end, all it's about is what someone's prepared to pay and what someone's prepared to accept.
So,
nothing more, nothing less.
Tony, what's he worth for you? Well, to get him to Carlton, what do you do?
I think that the magic one you dropped was the first round pick from next year. I reckon that'll close out the deal, and I reckon they'll do it tomorrow.
Okay. Tony, can you please call back tomorrow if that deal hasn't been done? I think we should discuss things further. Sam's in Geelong. G'day, Sam.
Just wanted to talk about the Essendon pitch to Josh Dunkley and the inclusion of adding his brother Kyle into the deal. I'm just surprised the AFL hasn't sort of stepped in and sort of said that that can't happen, because I think it sort of undermines a bit of the integrity of the drafting of him. Because, I mean, you're talking about a player who's been delisted from the Melbourne Footy Club, and is purely a midfielder joining Essendon, who I don't think would really see him as a potential AFL player. I think it's just a bit of a cheap shot. I don't think if these kind of deals were allowed to pass, I think you'd see a lot more, I think is dirty tactics.
Interesting point that Sam raises, Shano, essentially saying that it's manipulating the deal to include Kyle Dunkley, if that is the case. I understand his point. It's sort of an impossible one to outlaw, though.
Yeah, and I can see why you raise it, Sam, because there are questions about it. Obviously, they want Josh Dunkley. They think if he's playing alongside his brother, maybe that's the carrot to entice Josh further.
Mm.
I don't have an issue with it. If it is within the rules and the situation that Kyle Dunkley finds himself in, having been delisted from Melbourne, if he is able to easily be picked up by Essendon, and then that's a carrot Essendon can then use to get Josh Dunkley, I don't have an issue with it. It is inside the rules, and if Kyle Dunkley is willing to be used in that kind of circumstance as well, then all well and good to the Dunkley family.
Robert's in Keilor Downs. G'day, Rob.
How the hell are you?
We're good.
I'm just wondering about this. I'm a Collingwood supporter to start off with, but this Treloar business.
Yep.
Well, I'd rather keep him, but he's a ball getter.
Mm.
You know? And I'll be honest, I'd let DeGoey go myself.
You'd let DeGoey go before Adam Treloar, Robin?
Yes. Ooh. I know a lot of people wouldn't agree with me. I understand that, but I've been a member for over 30-odd years or something, and I've only seen two premierships, you know?
Well, I think the question is Jordan DeGoey your match winner? And I think that's the thing Collingwood has decided, that Jordan DeGoey can win matches off his own boot and Adam Treloar can't.
Mm. Treloar also on a heavily back-ended five-year deal. I said last week, I think that every day that goes by reduces the chance of him being at Collingwood next year and increases the chance of him being at another Victorian club.
And again, we're chasing Ned Guy, Collingwood's list manager. Hope to chat with him sometime this week. But
the Bulldogs, you would think, right now would have to be the favourites.
Yeah, with Josh Dunkley.
Just makes departing. Sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dunkley goes out.
I think
Treloar goes in.
The likelihood of the amount Collingwood has to pay as part of Adam Treloar's contract increases every day that goes by as well. So if they thought at the weekend we might have to pay $100,000 a year of his $900,000 deal.
It's got to be more than that.
Correct. That continues to increase. And I would suggest it's going to be around $250,000, $300,000.
Let's park our footy chat just for a little bit, because what has happened today in Victorian cricket is nothing short of remarkable. Will Pekowski scored 255 not out in his first Sheffield Shield innings of the summer for Victoria, and he's now backed it up with another double century, the third of his short first-class career now, 202 against Western Australia in the match in Adelaide. It's called for the likes of Ian Chappell to say now is the time. Put Pekowski in the test team. Sean Graff is the godfather of Victorian cricket. He has seen all of the greats come and go. Graffies, we welcome you. Haven't spoken to you in a long time on Sports Day. Are we witnessing one of the younger greats coming through?
Yes. I don't know about the godfather, but I'll take it from
you. That's what Jared calls you, Graffy, so I decided to stay with it.
Look, I think the young lad, look, we've known about his talent for a long time, and obviously he's had his issues, but he really seems to be on top of his game, and the two double tons have been a delight. Obviously very good batting conditions over here in Adelaide, but he's really put a couple of attacks to the sword, and he looks as though he's in a position now where certainly the Australian selectors have got a quandary, and they're going to have to make a call as to how they go about it. They've got an Australia A game coming up as well, plus they've obviously got the test squad, so that's what they've got in front of them, but he's certainly been in fine form, and there wouldn't be I don't think there'd be any issue if he was to be selected because he's ready.
So, Graffy, you've been in this scenario many times yourself. When you're picking younger guys, what's the risk involved? You know, like, why we know that the reasons why they'd pick him. Why wouldn't they pick him?
Look, the main reason is we've all known, you know, he's had his issues off the field when he first was selected and in the Australia A and also in the Australian Test squad. You know, a couple of years ago, a fraction younger. Certainly since then, we've certainly had done a lot of work with him, making certain that he's ready from a physical, a technical, and also from the mental side of things. And he's really well equipped now. And I think that's the only reason why they would be hesitant, maybe to a certain degree, because of what happened previously. But, you know, you've got to give the lad a real chance. I've got no doubt, and I've spoken to Chris Rogers about this in his short time as coach, that if he gets out into the centre of play in a test match, I've got no doubt he'll own the space because he's in a rich vein of form and he's a fine young cricketer. But it's just a matter of him getting there and going through with all the peripheral stuff that happens when you get to that level, off the field as well. And I think, but if he, as far as ability alone, there's no doubt he's in great form and looks to me to be a really long-term Australian cricketer if he can get out there and get selected.
Graffy, have you noticed a difference in the Will Pukowski that was playing for Victoria 12 months ago to the one that's been playing the last two innings for the Vics? Not so much as the player, because as Sam said, we know he's succeeding, but just in terms of the man, in terms of maturing and overcoming those mental health battles?
Yeah, look, definitely he's in a far better space. Look, the last time he got selected, he just, even though from a technical point of view and the way he was batting, he possibly may have been ready from that point of view, but he certainly wasn't ready from an overall perspective. So this time he's in a far better space and really, really loving the game. He's fielding really well. He feels well. Now, there was a lot of issues going on in his head the last time, and it was unfortunate, and not a lot of people knew about it, but it's a different situation this time. And so, you know, we've certainly tried, and we've certainly, Cricket Australia have been fully aware. And that's, as I mentioned before, that's the main reason why, if there's any trepidation, it's because of what happened before, and they don't want to make certain that, you know, he comes in and something like this could happen again. And that's really important that we bring, as in cricket, this young lad through the system and get him to play for Australia at the highest level if we can, and he can stay there for a long, long time. And that's really where we're at. And I'm confident now after seeing him in these couple of games, and with the right care at that top level, I've got no doubt he'll be right to actually stay there, hopefully, for a long period of time.
Graffy, take our bias as Victorians out of it for a moment. The fact that he had a double century against South Australia, 255 not out, another double ton against Western Australia. The fact that he is displaying this form, be it any other player from any other state, does that mandate he should get an opportunity at the highest level, that good form is telling to selectors and it should be rewarded?
Yeah, look, I've got no doubt that you know, the Australian thing, and the one thing that's a little bit slightly different this time too is the fact that I know Chris Rogers and certainly myself, we've been in touch with Trevor Holmes and with JL as well, so they've got a real good understanding where he's at. Previously, it was a little bit more unknown the last time this happened, but 2 years on, I think everyone's learned a lot more, and there's no doubt that he's in that space, that area now where He's the person that's ready, and it's just a matter of making that selection. Now, they've got to make the call. They've got to look at the balance of their team. I think the fact that Chris Rogers, the coach, has put him to opening, I think's a telling sign that we think he's ready, and it gives them an opportunity to open up the top end of the order for the Australian team. And I think the Australian selectors really admire the fact that he's got up there, got out there, and really taken that spot by the horn, so to speak, and he's given them an option.
So you'd open him, Graffy, at international level, not necessarily bat him at six?
Oh, look, not necessarily straight up, but it's certainly what it means, though, is against that new ball,
yep.
You know, he could open. Now, whether they do or they don't, like, there's certainly an opening maybe there. So therefore, if that's the case, then why not? He's got the technique and the ability to be able to play at that top, you know, at that top end of the order. It's whether he can play against the international tax. And the only way you're going to find that out is by trying him there, because he's certainly shown that, you know, he's got the ability. It's just a matter of getting out there and putting it on display.
Exciting times for the young man and the Vics. Good on you, Graffy.
No worries. Thanks, boys.
Sean Graff there, the man who runs the Victorian Cricket team. This is Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed and powered by Red Energy. More Sports Day after this.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed. And Red Energy. That's real Aussie energy. Switch today. Time for a Sports Day news update for Tyre Power. Awarded Canstar Blue's most satisfied customers again.
Let's go quickly to the Harcourts open line. Nick's in Hoppers Crossing. G'day, Nick.
How you going?
We good.
Yeah, that's good. Wanted to talk about two things. One was I'll go on the football side of things, and then I'll go on the cricket level briefly, quickly. What I wanted to say about the draft, there's a remedy possibly, but I won't be happy for everybody. Jeremy Cameron, he could simply say, look, you can harden his stance. I'm not going back at all if the deal falls through. Or he can nominate himself in the draft and possibly, imagine this, Sydney pick him up across town. Their heart will be broken if that sort of scenario happens. That could happen, you know. But I hope the deal is going to be done probably in the next couple of days and he goes to Geelong and it's all out of the place. Now, with the cricket, Pekowski is ready, I reckon, to get in. Now, whether he's going to play as an opener, I'm not so sure. But he's ready. If you listen to the Chappell brothers, they've both said he's ready to be put in the side, have a go at it. And also that guy from WA, Green, they've also a go.
Yeah, Cameron Green.
Sort of thing. I think that they're on the ball there. What do you think?
Great points, Nick. On Will Pekowski, it was interesting what Graffy was saying, just in terms of his readiness. In your mind, Sam, do you throw him in to the Australian team and if he fails, well, such is life, and you know he might be unlucky, he might go on and make a ton. But do you take the risk, given his form at the moment, throw him in and just get him part of that Australian team, get him part of the culture, or do you hold him back and just go, just hold off, young man, you're only 22 years of age, let's get some more runs. Let's continue to build these wonderful innings and you'll get your spot in the Australian team sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think what Graffy told us earlier is probably the way that they're thinking. It's only to do with, you know, he had his own mental health battles as a young man, which a lot of young people, both male and female, go through in their teens and in their 20s. It'll just be on that. It'll just be on the person, I would think. On form, you've got to pick him.
Yeah.
If they think he's mentally and emotionally ready for it, then you just pick him. And if he's not good enough at the start, it doesn't mean he can't go back and then get back in. So I think the only reason that they wouldn't pick him if they felt that maybe they just need to nurture him and as you pointed out, hold him back for a little bit longer.
From the way Graffy was speaking, I think he was just leaning toward he's ready.
Pick him. Yeah. Pick him and open him Don't bat him at six.
No, let's go the whole hog.
No, I agree. And briefly, we're talking about our sports update. Rugby Australia today announcing a new landmark broadcast deal with both Nine and Stan. Of course, Nine owns Stan. Worth an initial $100 million over a three-year period. So that ends what has now been a 25-year association between Fox Sports and Rugby Australia. This new deal with Nine will commence next year, 2021. It has a two-year option to be extended. But for a sport chain that has been in the dark for so long, I think it's the start of a new beginning, to be honest.
To get it on free to air with the Nine Network is massive.
Yeah.
And certainly all signs pointed toward being pushed toward Fox, and Nine has certainly swooped in here and I think taken a number of people by surprise. It also changes the way that we consume our sport, Sam. The fact that Stan, which is a very successful streaming service with a lot of movies and entertainment products, now all of a sudden moves into that sporting realm. Very similar. Obviously, there's KO already set up. But
OptiSport.
Correct. Amazon certainly does it more primarily in the United States. But this could be the future that we're witnessing. Stan is starting with rugby.
Yep.
But what's to say in a few years' time, you know, that there aren't tennis events being streamed via Stan, or they stream outside courts from the Australian Open via Stan. You know, second-tier rugby league is streamed via Stan. I think this is just the very beginning of seeing more sports signing with streaming services as opposed to signing with the actual free-to-air network or with a pay TV subscriber.
Completely agree. Mm. Could not agree more. I think it's only a matter of time before the AFL is on a streaming service. Yeah. This is Sports Day, and our Tyre Power expert, our Tyre Power Sports Update, get your free 5-minute safety check. Next, the latest in the AFL trade news, is Jack Higgins going to go to the Saints? How do they get that deal done? This is Sports Day for Kia and Red Energy.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed. And Red Energy. That's real Aussie energy. Switch today.
Welcome back to Sports Update. Welcome back to Sports Day. How am I going with pronunciations tonight?
It's all right. Just keep rolling with it.
Monday, I either sort of start things, you know, really hot on a roll, or I just ease into it after the weekend. Well, it's clearly the latter this time.
You know, just build yourself up for Tuesday.
It's summer. A trade update for CMC Markets, award-winning platforms over 30 years of trading experience. And speaking of trading experience, the Saints are going to have a lot of that because they've found another one that wants to come to their club. Jack Higgins officially today requesting a trade to the St Kilda Football Club. Fascinating. His manager, Paul Connors, confirmed that today.
Over the weekend, Jack got in touch with the coach and Blair Hartley at Richmond, and he asked personally whether he could seek a trade. He's got 1 year to go on the contract, so it's always a little bit more difficult when you're contracted, Damien, but he just wants to play footy, and he'd love another opportunity at the Saints.
He was struggling for opportunities with Richmond this year, obviously their premiership side. I think this is great for St Kilda, the fact that all of a sudden players are lining up wanting to be part of what they're doing at Moorabbin, and the semi-final this year obviously builds that trust. And Brett Ranton, he seems to be a real player's coach. I think it's terrific for St Kilda. I think it's great for Jack Higgins as well. If he's not getting a game at Richmond, and senior opportunities, as we know, are going to be hard to come by there on the back of another premiership, good on him for looking elsewhere, and I'm sure Richmond will support that.
What's he worth?
It's a good question, because at his best, I think a second-round pick.
So the offer from St Kilda at the moment is a future second?
Yep.
That's not going to get it done, I wouldn't have thought.
Well, what do you think else Richmond wants?
Well, he's 21. He's just about to turn 22. He'll be 22 by the start of next year, so he's a baby in footy terms. He's played 43 games in his three seasons. He's kicked 29 goals. We know he's sort of been played as a bit of a small forward when he has looked good at Richmond, but mainly because he couldn't break in to the midfield. He's only 177 centimetres, which actually, I knew he wasn't big, but I thought he might be a little bit bigger than that. So is he going to be, where is he going to play for the Saints? Is he going to be a sort of half forward flanker that pushes into the midfield? I mean, he's a first round draft pick. Yeah, he's a first round draft pick that I think his value would have only increased since he was drafted. I don't think you could argue it's gone the other way. He's got a year left on his deal, so why would the Tigers take a future second? Saints are going to get better, why would the Tigers take a pick in the 30s? To me, that just doesn't make much sense.
So do you think they need to part with a first-round pick?
Well, that sounds like it's overs as well, and the Saints aren't going to pay that.
That's my issue with it. A first-round pick seems too much, and I don't think St Kilda's in a position to do that.
I mean, like, I always try to think at this time of the year, when a player, you're talking about a player's value, it's obviously dependent on what the club that's trying to get him has got in their armoury. But you just take all of that away, Shane, just for a second, and just think to yourself, what's a 22-year-old that's got 50 games under his belt with the best team of the last 5 years, who's taken at pick 17, what's he worth right now? I would argue that it's somewhere around pick 20.
But is it a case of St Kilda is willing to take him or desperate to get him? And I think they're two very different arguments.
Well, Paul Connors wouldn't have come out today and said we're requesting a trade unless he knew that there was a way that the deal was going to get done. So he's obviously pretty confident, and obviously St Kilda want him.
All I can see is it being something in the future. St Kilda has pick 17, then pick 63. They're far from flush with draft picks at the moment, the Saints.
It's an interesting one. We spoke about Jeremy Cameron a little early on. Rising midfielder at the Cats, Brandon Parfitt, will not be part of that Jeremy Cameron deal, according to his management. The Giants had informed his management the Cat was one player they would request as part of what looms as that big trade, but the youngster will not be moving, according to the management. Got a lot of power, the players, haven't they? They just get to just move wherever they want to go, but as soon as someone says he might have to go to this club, they say, nah, we're digging our heels in. I tell you what, the AFL Players Association has never been stronger.
But in fairness to the players on this one, Sam, he's contracted to Geelong. He shouldn't have to go. He's contracted there. If he was out of contract, it's a whole different kettle of fish. But Brandon Parfitt's got another year to run at the Cats.
Yeah.
So why should he have to go?
Yeah, it's a fair point. The players have too much power, though.
Let me ask you this. Is Asava Radigalia a potential
for... I think the Cats have already said they wouldn't trade him either. You've got a lot of talent.
You're getting Jeremy Cameron in. I don't see how many games Asava Radigalia actually gets.
This is Sports Day for Giant Bicycles. We're still riding with you. Shane and I will be back after this.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed. And Red Energy. That's real Aussie energy. Switch today.
Welcome back to Sports Day for Maccas. Maccas 30 Days, 30 Deals is back. We are coming up to the 7 o'clock news. Sam McLaurin, Shane McGuinness with you. Shane, didn't we all learn on the weekend how much we all rely on the TAB?
Oh, speak for yourself. I it was a disaster for the TAB. Absolute disaster.
I mean we as in the racing industry.
Okay. To lose the millions that they would have to push back the races on the final day of the biggest carnival of the year.
I tell you what, forget the money just for a second. Like, these gambling companies have more money than God, let's be honest. It's the anxiety that it gives to the people that turn up wanting to have a casual punt. And it's the trust that you have with that agency. I think part of that may have been diminished on the weekend. That's what I'm talking about.
You reckon the trust? No, I don't think it is.
I do.
If your bet was laid, you got your bet.
It's not about that. I'm not talking about the ins and outs. I'm just talking about holistically. It just goes to show how easily a mega company like TAB can be brought down with a computer malfunction.
Get the feeling someone will have gotten in a fair bit of trouble and there might be a few backup systems in place.
Yeah, I mean, whatever caused it, I know it's still being investigated, but I think the lack of plan B and C is probably the thing that was the most jolting about
it. On one of the biggest betting days of the year, wasn't a good look.
No. This has been Sports Day for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy and our good friends at Kia. Another big day of trades. Tell you what, it's heating up. 3 days left. Are these deals going to get done? We'll stay with you on Sports Day. Shane and I will be back tomorrow from 6.
No!
Pull out for anger.
Need Taniela Tupo.
There he is! He's over! Taniela Tupo! Is that enough? It'll do for now. 22-15. Wallabies over the All Blacks.
Well, Taniela Tupo started it with two runs and he finishes it. 5 minutes left in this game and Taniela Tupo grasped it. Two really telling runs from Tupo to get across the advantage line to allow the scrum half Tate McDermott to hit more forward runners. His third try in a gold jersey for the Wallabies. Taniela Tupo, this is his first, second run. Got through Ioane, got through Ali Savia. And that really put a dent in the defensive line for the All Blacks. Only 13 men on the field. And quick play from this break here. You thought that Falau Fainga was going to go, but Taniela Tupo said, no, I'll have it. Low body height, Tupo over.
It's a brilliant ball from Falau Fainga. Not easy to throw. There's hands, there's arms, there's bodies. Tupo wanted it, and he knew, find the big man on your outside, none bigger on the field. Low to the ground. He's a specialist from this range.
Welcome back to Sports Day. You're listening for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Now, before we speak to our next guest regarding the significance of a big broadcasting announcement today, let's talk about some rare Bledisloe Cup joy for the Wallabies on the weekend off the top, Shane, because we haven't been able to beat New Zealand for some time, and I know we still lost the series, but the win in Brisbane over the weekend, well, it gave us something to cheer about.
There are positives there for the Wallabies at the moment, but at the end of the day, the All Blacks are still the All Blacks and still the all-conquering All Blacks. But, yeah, keen to get our next guest's thoughts just where the Wallabies are heading and maybe, just maybe, the tide is starting to turn.
Yeah, Sean Maloney is our next guest, world rugby commentator extraordinaire, and he joins us on Sports Day. Sean, welcome to the program. I know we didn't win the series, but that result in Brisbane, as Shane said, it gives some light towards the end of a tunnel, does it not?
Oh, absolutely, it does. I've danced my way around the house since that result late Saturday night. It's a huge one. You take them when you can get them against the All Blacks, and it was hard fought, obviously. Our guys have been knocked around with injury. They've been knocked around, admittedly, a little bit as well. But it was such a terrific performance. And again, Suncorp provides a venue for the Wallabies to land a huge upset win. They were 7-1 outsiders for that game. So that gives you some idea as to how little they were fancied in terms of going into that one. But it was a gutsy, gutsy, well-crafted victory for a very young Wallabies team.
Is this what the Wallabies need, Sean? Not only for confidence within the team itself, but also for rugby fans around Australia to show, hold on, you know, we're on the way back up. And to do that against the All Blacks, who are the formidable rugby opponent in this country, it just seems as though that might be the catalyst to bring fans who may have been a little bit disillusioned with the game back toward it.
Well, what makes it so significant is the fact that there's no other sport on at the moment. We're in that real sweet spot in terms of rugby. The AFL's wrapped up, NRL also. So we've got this real clean run for the moment before cricket gets rolling to try and showcase these guys. And I think off the back of that draw they had in Wellington going back a few weeks, rolled in with that result at the weekend. I mean, that's massive. And then you parlay that into what you guys are going to get into in just a second with the rights being announced today as well. Like, it's a good time to be a Wallaby supporter.
Mm. So can you just tell us about that deal? Because obviously it was announced today, or for those people that haven't tuned into the news, Rugby Union is going to move away from Fox Sports for the first time since it turned pro, which was back in the mid-90s. Channel 9 securing the rights from 2021. Tell us why, Sean, this is so significant for the code.
I just think it's that free-to-air exposure. I'm just sat with a couple of ex-Wallabies now, Stephen Hoyles and Drew Mitchell, and they've said that that's been one of the things that's really prohibited that cut-through with a younger demographic in particular, not having it on free-to-air. So there are no excuses now. We'll get that one Super Rugby game each week, you know, up in lights on free-to-air, and it's a win for it. Like, there are no more excuses, basically. So it puts the onus back on the code to try and sell it, to try and put results on the board to go with the fact that they've got that exposure, and it's just such a massive shot for them.
Were you surprised when you heard about the deal, Sean? I know a lot was being done within Rugby Australia to secure a deal with Fox Sports, and then in comes the Nine Network, along with their streaming service Stan, to provide coverage and arguably a wider base than even Fox Sports could potentially give Rugby Australia in this country.
I think one of the things that surprised me was how much of a toll it took in terms of getting here. Raylene Castle, obviously the now departed CEO of Rugby Australia, had that as a vision alongside a couple of her board members going back before COVID. COVID hit, everything got taken off the table. She got absolutely picked apart, is probably the kindest way of putting it, through the media. But stayed strong, and as a result, we've now got it where she had envisaged it going all the way back. So I guess that's the biggest thing that jumped out, just the toll that it took. But now we've got something to get excited about for the next 3 years, with a potential another two on top of that.
Do you feel, as Shane was alluding to, Sean, do you feel like this is a bit of a reset for this great sport? I mean, I remember growing up, and obviously I grew up in AFL heartland here in Victoria. But, you know, when I was 10, 11, 12, when the Wallabies were on, you just, like, it was must-watch TV. You had to be there, wherever they were playing, whoever they were playing, because not only were they successful, but they carried this international swagger about them. Now, we know that a lot's happened to this great sport over the next 10 to 15 years, and it's become lost in Australia's sporting landscape, which I think is quite sad. But you talk about, you know, an exciting time to be a Wallaby supporter. It's a brand new free-to-air deal. They've just beaten the All Blacks, albeit they've lost the series. Maybe now kids, even if they're not growing up in rugby heartland, are going to start appreciating this team again.
It's, mate, that is such a great point. That's one of the great sells around the Wallabies, is that they're one of only, you know, a couple of international teams that Australia can roll out that everyone can climb in behind. And I've seen it through World Cup after World Cup, when they get on a bit of a roll, that they have the ability to capture,
that's right,
so many people. And through that exposure, it will just do so much for the code. It really will.
Sean, it's a massive time for rugby, and again, seeing that deal, like Sam, I was surprised, but surprised with glee that Nine had taken that on, and I think it opens up to a whole new audience, and I think it can only be good times ahead for Rugby Australia. Sean Maloney, World Rugby Commentator, appreciate your time on Sports Day.
Go the Wallabies, boys.
Go Wallabies. Good on you, Sean. Hey, Sean, are you still there?
Yes, mate.
Can you just, as we leave you, can you just give us one player? I know that they blooded a lot of youth over the last few matches. Can you give us one player? I'll go out and buy a Wallabies jumper tomorrow. What number am I getting?
Oh, great. That's a great question. One of the young guys coming through. Mate, number 13, Jordy Pitaia. He's unbelievable.
Okay. Jordy Pitaia, that's number 13. That's what I'm wearing tomorrow. Good on you, Sean. Sean Maloney there.
He is next level. Enjoy.
Like you are. Good on you, Sean. Sean Maloney there. And, yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't know what rugby union was until I turned on the Wallabies. You start looking at the likes of George Gregan, and it was like, I don't know what's going on in this sport, but I love it. And then over the next few years, every time they were in a World Cup, every time that there was a Bledisloe Cup, I made sure wherever I was, I'd find time to watch it. I couldn't tell you. I watched a bit of the game on the weekend. I couldn't tell you anything that's happened to the Wallabies in the last 5 years, apart from the fact that Ray Lancastle left and that Israel Folau basically blew the place up.
And that's the problem. It's all bad news stories around
rugby
Australia.
Yeah, that's why the last few days has been so good.
Like you grow up listening to Gordon Bennett, call the rugby. It's,
Yeah, it was like you were sitting down watching the Olympics in the sense of, you know, when the Olympics is on, nothing else matters.
Correct.
In sport. When the Wallabies were playing in World Cup finals, nothing else mattered. And it's completely lost its place in Australian sporting landscape. And now it's going to get some of that back, I reckon.
Just before we get to the break.
Jordy Pitaia's number 13.
Correct, Jordy Pitaia. Do you think this will be the start of an evolution of Australian broadcasting? The fact that not only Channel 9 picking up the rights, but obviously...
Channel 9 own the radio waves which we're on currently, by the way.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make that clear.
I'm well aware of that. I'm not going to critique them. But the fact that Stan Sport is now going to become a thing, that maybe we do see these streaming services, not just Stan, and we know KO exists as well, but is that going to be the new way that we start to watch our sport as opposed to necessarily on free-to-air or pay TV?
I think so. Mm. I remember two and a half years ago, I wrote a story saying that the AFL were looking into Amazon as a potential, and everyone laughed as if it'll ever go to streaming service. It's happening. Don't worry about it.
Correct.
As in, don't argue about it anymore. There will be a time in our lifetime, probably sooner.
Oh, no doubt in our lifetime. And
AFL
very, very soon
is broadcast on Amazon.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's happening.
I totally agree with you, Sam. And we've already seen that with the NFL in the US. And I think Amazon's presence
EPL,
is only
Optus.
Ever, yeah, only ever increasing.
God, I never thought I'd have an Optus subscription, I'll tell you that.
See, there you go.
But now I do. Telstra's still better. This is
neither of those, for the record, own the radio station.
No. There's no money changing hands there. This is Sports Day. We'll be right back.
Good to have your company on this Monday night edition of Sports Day. Shane McGuinness alongside Sam McClure. All with thanks to Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Well, as we approach the end of 2020, it's fair to say, Sam, that this year in regards to sport has been a year like no other, and one that we...
Well, it's been a year like no other for everyone, really.
Well, certainly one... I think bringing it back to sport that we hope we don't see again. Empty stadia, you know, fans being, players being moved around the world. The fact that as fans, we haven't been able to experience the thing that we really enjoy
going,
watching sport live. One man who has taken us behind the scenes of the year that was is no stranger to documentary filmmaking. I talk of none other than Peter Dixon.
Australian sport as we know it is on the brink of collapse.
This is tough. It's been in my lifetime.
We can no longer rely on sport.
We are in big trouble.
We've been able to create those bubbles for those sports that are big in the country that a lot of people are watching.
To skip through borders, it's a privilege.
Townsville has welcomed me with open arms.
Eventually, you just get better from being around people.
What do you do? It's weird.
I was acting like an 18-year-old kid for the first 6 weeks.
And every day we're on guard.
the difficult thing has been trying to get me to hang out with my girlfriend.
There's always going to be 1% that don't do the right thing. It's frustrating that they don't understand that.
I wouldn't have put this in the script.
Look at you. You're so towery, aren't you? You don't want to answer that.
You're not bad, are you?
Hey, Jack, you're not that cool, mate. Keep moving.
If you see one lying under a tree, leave him alone.
Leave him alone and run away.
Pete, thanks so much for your time on Sports Day.
No problem.
The new documentary, The Sporting Bubble, it airs on Wednesday night. When did you first think, hold on, I've got to start documenting what's unfolding in 2020 because it's going to be history in the making?
Yeah, it's funny. I sort of through the year thinking, because I'm like you guys, I'm locked down in Melbourne, so it's like, geez, how could I tell this story? And out of the blue, I got a call from Nine, and we had a chat about the possibility of it happening. And TEQ Queensland were behind it as well. I mean, they were sort of jumping on this moment as they would, the fact that they were the state that was offering all this up. So, yeah, I took it on. It was only a couple of months ago now and right in the heat of it. So, yeah, it was a bit of a logistical challenge because directing and shooting and everything and getting into bubbles. And luckily enough, I had a little bit of my team up in Queensland. So, and then we quarantined. So there was a bit going on, but... Well, in a year like no other, yeah, this is a documentary like no other that I've ever been involved in.
Pete, what was, when you asked yourself the question of what I wanted this story to be or what I wanted this story to show, did that end up evolving throughout the year? I can imagine you probably went into filming with one idea and it probably changed four or five times before you ended.
Yeah, great question, Sam. I did. I went in. Well, at the start, it was like, what the hell can we grab here in terms of there was so many protocols, as you guys are aware of, with you know, hubs and what you can and can't do. But I guess my overarching feeling at the beginning was I just wanted to tell the story of how important sport is to us as Australians. And I was keenly feeling it like everyone else when there was nothing to watch. Do you know? I mean... I love documentaries, but I think I ran out of documentaries worldwide watching because there's no live sport on anywhere. So, and, you know, everyone I knew was flat about that, and everyone was seen to be very down who loved their sport. And I thought, well, that's sort of where I wanted to take it. And it evolved into that. It evolved into that's the overarching feeling of this and managing to get the different codes. We got the AFL, the NRL, netball, V8s, and we managed to cover the boxing, the Horn Zoo bout, and that was pretty much the first thing I think that really got up in terms of an event this year. So, yeah, that was it, Sam. It was more how important sport is to us, and it's a very easy thing to say, I think, as an Australian. You know, it just rolls off the tongue. Oh, we love our sports, part of our culture. But I wanted to sort of dig a bit deeper into that, and the fact that these hubs operated and these athletes, you know, sacrificed so much, and codes were on the edge of, you know, some of them extinction. It was that really was prevalent throughout the story, I feel.
Pete, did you find most of those who were interviewed in the documentary more than willing to take part? I know you've got snippets with the likes of Gillon McLachlan, Peter Volandis, who really led the NRL throughout this, Patrick Dangerfield, St Kilda opened their doors. Was everyone more than willing to partake given, I guess, recording and having this in the history archives would be something that was pretty special across the different codes?
Yeah, and I think that was a big reason why they did. To be fair, the all the heads of the codes of those codes I mentioned were more than happy to come on. It was just a matter of managing how to do it. To be fair, at times everyone's in different states, and the new way of documenting things, which was unheard of a few years ago, where you can actually get away now with having online sort of interviews and things like that. that helped. I mean, Gil was in at his farm locked down for most of the year, and then he just before he came, he flew up to Queensland. Actually, the bubble, I managed to grab him the day before when he was in Melbourne. Yeah, it was. They were all very keen, and I think you're right. I think they wanted to be part of something that was a one off, and it's a different sort of documentary for me, not focusing on one sport either. So when they all knew that the others were involved, they sort of, I think that helped, and they jumped on.
What was the hardest part?
Is that Sam? I think making it, mate. crafting, gathering all the elements of the story, the people we needed, the access that we were granted at various times, and I think that was the most difficult part. The everyone involved was terrific and gave as much as they could, but I think more just the mechanics of making this one in such a short time frame was the most difficult part.
Pete, did you learn anything out of it, the fact of the challenge involved for these various sports, i.e. if they had to do it all again next year, if circumstances were such, knock on wood, that they're not, but if they were, that these sports could go again?
Yeah, I'd shudder to think if they have to do this again. I got the intense feeling early on that it was all new and kind of exciting. You know, to be fair, a lot of them got out of this state and were in Queensland, which is a good thing. And there was a lot of excitement and eagerness early on. I think what I saw over the journey was it became a really strong element of, we're just sick to hell of each other. Do you know what I mean? Like they're living in each other's pockets, not having, you know, certain people didn't have their families and so forth. So I think if they had to do it all again, they would, definitely, because it keeps their codes going. But, it'd be tough for them to think like that right now, I'd imagine. Their emotions, I think, were heightened more near the end as well. You know, and so on, even when I look at how Richmond pulled it off, I mean, it's extraordinary. There's a grab in there from Rossi Lyon, I think was with you, Sam, where he said, on Classified, where he said, you know, whoever wins this is, will go down in history. I totally agree with that. And I think that, you know, that doesn't need to be underplayed. That is just a sensational effort, especially for Richmond, who, you know, from Victoria and lockdown. So, lost my way. But, yeah, I think that's – I can't imagine them doing that again next year. If we have to do that again, God help us.
Yeah, well, you might have to make part two. Pete, it's been a shocking year for so many reasons. I guess one of the silver linings is that we get to see one of your great – works of art again in another documentary. Looking forward to it. It airs on Wednesday night right after Origin Game 2. Thanks for joining us, Pete.
No worries, guys. Appreciate it. Cheers.
Pete Dixon there, now legendary documentary filmmaker in this country. And The Sporting Bubble is on Wednesday night on Channel 9 right after Origin Game 2. That's going to be fascinating. This is Sports Day with Sam McClure and Shane McGinnis. We'll be right back.
Good to have your company on this Monday night, almost there for Sports Day, or thanks to Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Well, earlier today, our very own Matthew Lloyd, celebrating his wedding anniversary today, no less. Congratulations, Lloydie and Lisa. Lloydie had his list of great sporting marriages on Trade Radio. Can you think of a couple? See if they line up with Lloydie's list.
Yes, November 9, 2002, the Xavier Chapel, Cornsey, at Xavier College. We got married, so I thought to myself, I normally struggle for one list a week with Sports Day on 3OW, but I've had to come up with five a week, so I'm thinking, and obviously Lisa said, what are we going to do for our wedding anniversary? And obviously we're just looking at maybe a nice Stoke House lunch or something maybe later, but I thought to myself, great sporting relationships or marriages over the years is my top five. So it's sort of something that was a spin-off from our anniversary today. So I could have gone the Ablett family in Geelong and all those sort of things, but the more I started looking around, I've come up with some unbelievable history, which history lesson maybe for some of our younger folk, which I sort of certainly learnt a lot. But at number five, obviously the most current one, Clarko, is Clarko and Hawthorn. I think that he walked through the doors in 2005. Remember so many Hawthorn people scoffing at the fact that Clarko was going to be the coach. And 16 years on, 368 games and four flags. The Clarkson Hawthorn. Not sure how much longer it's got to go, Cornsy, but it's been a wonderful marriage between the two of them.
Yeah, so he was our midfield coach at Port Adelaide in 2004, and he got the job prior to the finals. So he left straight away, as you can understand. But knew he was good, Lordo. He took us on a pre-season camp to New Zealand at the end of 2003. It was his idea. He put the whole thing together. He'd done it with Central Districts here from their team, which he had a lot of success with in the SANFL, and he organised the whole thing. I thought, you knew there was something there. You didn't know, of course, the history and go on to be one of the greatest coaches of all time. But, yeah, he was a special coach, and you could sense it back then. So I love that one.
Someone also you would know extremely well, at number four, John Cale and the Port Adelaide Football Club, Kane. I just think, what a record. So 1958 was when he first played a game of football for Port Adelaide, and he was the inaugural coach of Port Adelaide in 1998. But 10 premierships as a coach, four-time premiership player, and four-time best and fairest winner at the Port Adelaide Football Club. What a marriage that one's been.
Well, and he's a legend. Mm. And he used to, the players would say, the best motivator that they've ever seen, to the point where if you were just an ordinary footballer, and I think Port Adelaide's side back then, this is a compliment, had just some ordinary players that he turned into just tough, hard players. So he'd get them that worked up that they felt like he wanted to run through brick walls for them. Just a great motivator and lovely person. And I see him down Jetty Road often. He always stops and has a chat. He rocks up to the Best and Fairest and presents the John Cale Award for the Best and Fairest Award winner. So, yeah, you're right. And you know, the John Cale medal is still there. So I love that one.
And what I love about John is, I can sense why you'd want to play for John Cale. And I think that's where a lot of the modern-day coaches, it's very much, no, I don't need to motivate anyone. Mm. It's just about them doing what they need to do. And I think Cale would have been a great coach to play for. Number three, Kevin Sheedy. Sheedy at number three, just 27 years as the coach from 1981 to 2007.
Never happened again.
No, Clarko, we'll see how many he gets to, but he's still got about 11 years to go. I think that Kevin, and he's on the board now, and some will say, oh, he shouldn't be there. How can the club move on from Kevin Sheedy? He just loves the club, and he's a wonderful player for Richmond, but just what he's done for the footy club has been magnificent. And the supporters just love him for all that he's been. I even spent 5 hours with him on Thursday, just hanging off every word that Sheeds had to say. So
for the game too.
For the game, it's true.
Like, not just for, particularly for Essendon, but there's been no greater motivator, entertainer and promoter, I should say, is the word I'm looking for the game than Kevin Sheedy. Yeah. No one's done more across the competition, I don't think.
Right. At number two, Kane, the Norm Smith medal is obviously a famous medal. I think it's the best medal there is to win in football, if you can be the best player on the ground on grand final day. And Norm Smith, just his record with the Melbourne Football Club and his marriage with the Melbourne. So he played between 1935 and 1948, 210 games, four premierships he won for Melbourne through their greatest era. Probably not their greatest year, because then he went and coached from 1952 to 1967. He was part of six premierships. So Norm Smith, AFL, and he's also the AFL Team of the Century coach, Norm Smith. So it just shows how good he was. So just the greatest legend. Obviously, Barassi's been super for Melbourne, but Norm Smith, learned a lot about him last night. But number one, Kane, Jock McHale and the Collingwood Football Club.
Yep.
1903 to 1920, 261 games. He was a premiership player once. Then he captain coached them to a premiership in 1917. And then he coached them between 1912 and 1949. 714 games, 16 grand finals, 8 premierships. And I didn't know this. So he finished in 1949. And then he went and helped the club in support roles. And they had a massive premiership drought. And in 19, there was a 17-year drought, and he assisted them in winning the premiership in, I think, 1953 it was. I'll get my numbers right. But he got so caught up in it, he had a heart attack and died 24 hours later after the drought-breaking premiership. So Jock McHale and Collingwood Kano, I think, is the greatest sporting relationship marriage that there's been.
Another edition of Lloydie's List and another big show done. Hope you can join Sam and I again tomorrow from 6 o'clock. Plenty to come on a Tuesday night edition of Sports Day. Of course, we'll continue to look ahead to the end of Trade Week. It all wraps up on Friday afternoon. You've been listening to Sports Day. It's all with thanks to Wilson Homes. Chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home design to suit your individual lifestyle. Sam and I will talk to you from 6 tomorrow.